Krakow in 1923.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah. And he came, this is my Rebbe, Rabbi Twersky Zatzal, Rabbi Shlomo Twersky. He came to America at the age of two in 1925 with his parents. Now, he grew up in Milwaukee, and I'm going to talk about that next. Now, his parents were Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Twersky and Rebbetzin Devorah Leah Twersky. His father was known here in America as the Milwaukee Rebbe, and in Europe he was known as the Hornisteipler Rebbe. Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel Twersky. Hornisteipl was the name of their town in Ukraine. Hornisteipl. Hornisteipl. The Steipler Gaon Zatzal, who we are all familiar with, was from that town. So Steipler was from Hornisteipl. They shortened it in his title. And he was born from a bracha of Rabbi Twersky's great-grandfather. So Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Nissan, the Milwaukee Rebbe, and his Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Devorah Leah, she was the daughter of the Baba Rebbe in Poland, in Eastern Europe. Was that Poland, or I think it was. I'm not Poland or Ukraine, I'm not sure. Baba. And her brother was the Baba Rebbe here in the States, a Holocaust survivor, Rabbi Shlomo Halberstam. They came over in the early 1920s, I mentioned 1925, from Europe. And in the town of Milwaukee, they established a kehillah there, which is still there to this day, flourishing. His son, Rabbi Michal Twersky, leads that kehillah. And in the Milwaukee of the 1920s and 30s and 40s, he raised, along with his wife, five Hasidish Talmidei Chachamim Gedolim. And let's just say Milwaukee was not Borough Park. And it's really unbelievable what they accomplished, and not only in terms of their community in Klal Yisrael, but their sons, their five sons, of such tremendous impact on our lives. Okay, so that was the generation back. His father, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael, the Milwaukee Rebbe, his father was Reb Leibele Twersky. He was also the Hornisteipler Rebbe in Ukraine. He also left Europe, first went to Antwerp and then Chicago, and he is buried in Chicago. That's his Makom Menucha. That's Reb Leibele Twersky, the Hornisteipler Rebbe, my Rebbe's grandfather. His father was Rav Mordechai Dov Twersky, Hornisteipler Rebbe in Hornisteipl. And he stayed there and he passed away there in 1903. He was an enormous Talmud Chacham in the Gadol Batorah. He wrote many Sforim and was a posek as well, looked to for Pesach Halacha in that whole area of Europe. Had several Sforim, both in Lamdisha and Halacha, and also in Chasidus. His Sefer on Chasidus is called the Pele Yoetz. There's another Sefer Pele Yoetz written by an earlier person, a great Sephardi Gadol. Both the names are the same, but two different Sforim. So that's Rav Mordechai Dov. And again, he was in Hornisteipl. He was a son-in-law of the Divrei Chaim, Rav Chaim Sanzer, one of the great Rebbes in Europe. So that was the Rav Mordechai Dov's father-in-law. Rav Chaim of Sanz. The Sanzer Rav, or the Divrei Chaim. That was Rav Mordechai Dov's shver, his father-in-law. Okay, now at that point, so we got four generations, Rabbi Shlomo Twersky, his father, and his father. That's where we are right now. Rav Mordechai Dov, the Pele Yoetz. Now, there you have a mother, right? His mother was named Shterna.
Wait, which was mother?
The Pele Yoetz. Rav Mordechai Dov?
Mm-hmm.
Rav Mordechai Dov's mother was Shterna, which means star, kochav. She married someone named Rav Meshulam Zusha. That was his father, Rav Mordechai Dov's father. He was a descendant, this Rav Meshulam Zusha, of the Rebbe Rav Zusha of Anapol. So that's how the Twerskys go back to the Rebbe Reb Zusha, from that line. Now, I'm not going to go that way, though. I just wanted to tell you that connection there. So again, his mother, Reb Mordechai Dov's mother, was Shterna. She was the daughter of Rav Yaakov Yisroel, same name, of Chikas. T-C-H-K-A-S in English. In Ukraine, I don't know how they spelled it. That's how he would spell it. Chikas. These towns are all still there. They're all, I met someone from Chikas, a Mishulach, who comes around here each year trying to rebuild the community there. So in Ukraine, they're still around. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas, and this is Rav Mordechai Dov's grandfather. Shterna was the mother, and then her father was Rav Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas. Rav Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas was one of eight sons to his father, Rav Mordechai Twersky, known as the Chernobyler Maggid. One more time, right? So Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas was the third of eight sons to his father, Rav Mordechai Twersky, also known as the Maggid of Chernobyl. Chernobyler Maggid. Now we're back to late 1700s at this point and into the 1800s. The Chernobyler Maggid was a very holy man, and he was known to be Mefarnes, the Lamed Vav, hidden tzaddikim. He used to raise money and go to people's houses, and he supported the Lamed Vav tzaddikim. But all of them, or some of them, I don't know, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was one of them. But that's one thing that's well known about him. So as I mentioned, he had eight sons from two wives. His first wife passed away, then a second wife. So one of the eight sons, the third, was Rav Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas. Rav Mordechai, the Chernobyler Maggid, the father of Rav Yaakov Yisrael of Chikas. So that's Rav Mordechai, the Maggid of Chernobyl, and his father is the beginning of this whole lineage, the Maorei Nayim, and that's Rav Menachem Nochum Twersky of Chernobyl. Rav Menachem Nochum. Rav Menachem Nochum Twersky. He was the first Chernobyler Rebbe. He was a student of the Baal Shem Tov, and after the Baal Shem Tov was Nifter, he was a student of the Maggid of Mezerich. The Talmud of both. And his Sefer, the Maorei Nayim, which was written late 1700s, because he died in 1797, is one of the earlier Sifrei Chasidus that we have from that generation of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem and the Maggid. It's learned across the board amongst all lineages, like any Sefer is from that era. Maor Einayim. I'll tell you one story about, what's that, Mir?
You told that we learned Divrei Torah a lot from
that. Yes, we said over Divrei Torah from the Maor Einayim, absolutely. So I'll tell you one story about him. So he lived, of course, in Chernobyl. He was the first Rebbe of Chernobyl. And they would make sure that on Friday afternoon, someone would leave a lantern, a lamp burning, a candle in his room, so he'd have some light there Friday night. So one Friday night, after davening, after the Suda, I suppose, he went back into his room, and the room had a candle burning. As soon as he went into the room, he started like walking around like it was pitch black. And it was light. Like it was dark. And it was clear that he couldn't see. That for him it was dark. He was like feeling his way around the room. But there was a candle lit in the room. So everybody was very mispoel, like wondering what's going on here. And they couldn't figure out what's doing. So they asked a few questions around the household, and one of the non-Jewish helpers of that house, it was his task to light the candle in the room before Shabbos, so the Rebbe would have a candle there. This particular week, he forgot, and he lit it on Shabbos. So when the Maori Nine went in the room, he couldn't see. So Maori Nine is a fitting title for his name, the light of one's eyes, right? The light of the eyes. What's that? That's what we're trying to do that. Yeah, we could learn. We probably will learn in Maori Nine. What's that?
Do
I? Absolutely. I believe the story, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I don't believe all stories. Mrs. Diskin's asking a good question. I don't believe all stories. That story I believe. So because, you know, when you have a shaychus to a particular people and their line and what they represent, that's not hard for me to, that's not a stretch for me to believe that. So knowing my Rebbe, and this is his 7th, 8th generation great-grandfather, you know, I don't have a hard time with that. Yeah. He couldn't. He walked in, and for him, the room was dark because the candle was lit on Shabbos.
For him, but it was
yeah. So halachically, right? You're not allowed to benefit from a melacha that a goy does for you on Shabbos. Right, and that's not allowed.
A goy told to light it.
Right, but he lit it for a Jew, and there was only light in the room. So it's usher in halacha. It's usher in halacha to benefit from a melacha that a goy does for a Jew. But he didn't know that. So, but he lived in that reality. Yeah. Please, Shifa, yeah.
But if the person has a problem, like mm-hmm. if they're sick, and the guy does something for them on Shabbos.
Yeah, that's a whole different halacha. Sickness, emergencies, a guy doing a malacha for a Jew, that's what we tell people to do.
But the person, you're talking about somebody who was sick.
No, he wasn't sick. No, he was healthy. He was healthy. They did not light the fire for him because, or the candle because he was sick. Just so he would have light.
So why did he have a non-Jew with him?
Why what?
Why did he have a non-Jew with him?
Why did he?
Yeah.
That was very common to have non-Jewish helpers around the house, cleaning lady, you know, anybody who was helping, pitching in. There was a lot of reliance. We have it too. We have it too.
Jews were poor, but the
Goyim
were poorer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, please. Sorry.
Just wondering if there's any information. They were such an, were and are such an exceptional family. Is there any story about anything, why, or, you know, is there anything?
There's a couple of things.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things, and I maybe can get a little flavor for it. So, somebody once asked my Rebbe's father, the Milwaukee Rebbe, how he and his wife raised 5 Hasidisha Talmidei Chachamim in Milwaukee in the 1930s. So he said, I never left Hornisdyple. That's one, something to think about. You know. And that has to be understood well because, as they are now, they're very with it people. They're not removed. They're not living in some enclave somewhere. They're very with the people, which was one of the things that was very striking to me about Rabbi Shlomo Twersky. He was very with the people, and at the same time, you knew you were in the presence of a person who was really had his roots tied at a very high level. You could always sense that. So I think that's a little bit of an insight. And they took that with them, like wherever they went, they took that with them. Yeah, please, Regina.
My mother, she used to say that the top there of the Bob of
her rabbit, yeah.
So my mother used to say what a miracle it was. First, they went to New York by themselves, and everybody was, how could they do that? And they said, here they raise such children.
Yes.
And everything's going to be terrible, and it's almost, you know, very, it was like a story to me.
It is, you know, it really is. But it's amazing what they did, what they accomplished.
That was in the 20s?
This was in the 1920s when they came. They came in the 1925, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, yeah. So it'd be even worse. I mean, it was worse. There was no yeshiva.
There's nothing. No yeshivas. One. There's one yeshiva, New York. And no day schools. You know, it was a completely different landscape than we live in. Yeah, New York, please.
Were they sort of like politically aware? I mean, were they like English speaking and, you know how we had like the election and they tell you all to vote and be aware of what's going on. And
so I would answer like this. Those five sons, right, Rabbi Shlomo Trusky, mm-hmm. my Rebbe was the oldest of the five.
Yeah.
His brother also passed away, Rav Muttel, not to be confused with his son, Rav Muttel.
Yeah.
The third brother is Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, the famous psychiatrist, who's written so many beautiful books. The younger two brothers are twins. That's Rav Michal and Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron is a law professor. Rav Michal is a Rav in Milwaukee. They are all articulate, had a command of the English language, which was superb, and fluent Yiddish speakers. The parents were European, right? So they spoke English. You know. They were European. The sons were a master, really, of oratory, and just their skills were phenomenal. My Rebbe did not talk a lot about politics. Very little. Very little. His youngest brother, Rav Aaron Twersky, is very involved in the political world and does a lot of that for the Agudas Yisrael in New York. He's one of their main legal people. So I think that really would depend on which one. Yeah. Please, Mrs. Fran, yeah.
There was a Chernobyl Rebbe who used to come to Baltimore in the 50s.
Was he from Philadelphia? Do you know?
He was in Williamsburg when I knew about him.
Okay. So I don't know. I don't know which Rebbe that was. I just recently found out that there was a Twersky Chernobyl Rebbe in Philadelphia. Someone who was here took a picture of his matzev and showed it to me. I never knew that. But it doesn't sound like that's him. Now in New York, you have the Rach Mistrivka Rebbe, who that's also Chernobyl. But Chernobyl in the 1950s in New York, I simply don't know where about that person. There's a Chernobyl Rebbe now in B'nai Brak. Now, the reason you have so many branches of Chernobyl is because, going back on our little piece of history there, the Chernobyl Maggid had eight sons. They all became Rebbes, every single one. They all had a court and following, and we're talking about tens of thousands of Hasidim in Ukraine in the early 1800s. It was an enormous Hasidus in Europe. So Chernobyl, Chikas, Makarov, Rach Mistrivka, Skver, the Skver Rebbe, the Zatorsky, Trisk, Koroshev, these are all lines of Chernobyl, Hornestipel, and it was very, very vast. Much of it wiped out in World War I, and then decimated in World War II. So only those who got out during those times, you know, survived. And now you do have Rach Mistrivka in Yerushalayim, which is getting to be a pretty large chassidus, and also in Borough Park. You have Chernobyl as well in B'nai Brak, and Hornestipel through Rav Michal and his mishpacha, Rabbi Mati Twersky, my Rebbe's son, in Flatbush, and his brother-in-law, Rav Shalom Friedman, in Yerushalayim. So that's so many, that's just a few of the many branches of Chernobyl. They're all Chernobyl, they're all Twerskys, they're all related, whether they're first cousins or tenth cousins, they're all from the same lineage, from that very first one, the Maori Naim, of Menachem Nachum. So that's about seven or eight generations of this Hasidus. That is the particular line that I personally associate with, which is Hornestipel or Chernobyl. And thanks for tuning in. It's nice to be able to share that. Always good to hear that history, where people come from. Please. Rav Michal's in Milwaukee, and his wife, Rebetzin Fegi Twersky, also very well known. So they've been there for a long time.
And who was the second son?
The second of those five was named Rav Muttel. He was an accountant in New York and did a lot of behind-the-scenes chesed, from what I've told. They said it just looked like an accounting office. But there was a lot of chesed and maestim tovim that was coming forth from that place. He was the most low-key of all the brothers. The second one, Rav Muttel, was a very low-key person. And more, I'd say, more of a hidden type of community. Askin, he was an Askin, but in a very under-the-radar kind of way. Please, Linda.
Just, could you remind me what the Mahoranayim is about? I remember learning that book many, many, many years ago, but I don't think it came out in English.
No.
I remember it was fascinating, but I
couldn't say what it's about. There's hundreds of topics that are discussed. It's Hasidus. It's Hasidus. It's mamish from the first, second generation of Hasidus. It's about so many things. Right, so maybe we'll get a mimer from there during the semester. Okay, so this is the Malchus Shlomo. Rabbi Twersky Zatzal did not write this sefer, but it was compiled, as I said, by his grandson. Isa b'Gemora Brachos. It says in the Gemara, Kishachola Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became ill, and that's to say he was dying. Nichnesu tamid of the Vakro. His Talmidim came to visit him. Kevan Shara'a Osan, when he saw them, Hischel Livkos, he began to cry. Amrulo, they said to him, Mibne ma ata boche, why are you crying? Amar Lohem, so he said back to his students, Ilu lifne melech basar vadam hayu malichin osi, etc. If they were bringing me before a king of flesh and blood who is here today and in the grave tomorrow, I would still be afraid. I'll just fill in the blank. All the more so that I'm about to stand before the Melech Malchei Hamlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about to stand before the King of Kings. That was the first answer he said to them. V'lo od. And he continued. This is still a quote from the Gemara. Ella, Sheyesh Lefanai Beis Derachim. There are two paths in front of me. Echad Shal Gan Eden VeEchad Shal Gehenem. One goes to Gan Eden, one goes to Gehenem. Ve'eni yodea be'ezo molichin osi. And I don't know on which path they are going to lead me. Velo efke, and I shouldn't cry. Arkan l'shono. That's end quote from the Gemara in Brachos. So the question, which of course we're all thinking about, ulich ora, eno muvan, this is very hard to understand. Eich lo yoda Rav Yochanan, how did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai not know im hu holeich l'gan Eden ol l'gehenem, which direction he was going? Halo bevada yoda, he certainly knew about himself, shokol shenosav hayu b'kedusha, that his life was a holy life, u'b'tahara, be'isek ha'torah v'ha'mitzvos, completely involved, he was the nasi of the Sanhedrin. U'ma hoya sfeiko, why was he in doubt? So, it's just striking. Here is the Tzadik Hador, the Godel Hador, on his deathbed. He says to his Talmidim, I don't know if I'm going to Gan Eden or to Gehenna. So how would that make everybody else feel? Right? Like, what about us? Right? So that's the Gemara, and that's the question, of course, what's happening here? So this is Rabbi Twersky's approach to this very difficult Gemara. Aval ho'inyan hu. Ki ha-Torah hu ha-kli she'al yado yochol linso Hashem Yisborach. The Torah is the kli. It's the vessel through which a person can find God. And he was very strong on talking about Hashem being real in people's lives, not just a concept. So when he's saying here to find Hashem, he really means a relationship with our Kodesh Baruch Hu. The only way to get it is through Torah. Aval, however, im hu eino mevakesh, if a person is not a seeker, az lo yimsa klum, they won't find anything. Va'afal pi shehu shomer kol ha-Torah kula. Even though they're keeping the Torah, if they're not looking for God in actively in their life, they won't find him. V'hu kamo kol kelim, it's like any other kli, like any other vessel or instrument. Afal pi sheyesh lo ha-kli biyado. You may have the kli in your hand. im eino mishtamesh bo, but if you don't use it, hare lo mo il klum, it won't help you at all. So if you're holding a hammer in your hand, that doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean you know how to build. You're just holding a hammer. So with the Torah, he says, it is the kli through which we find Hashem, but the person must be a mevakesh to be looking for Hashem, and then the Torah will help him or her find Hashem. So that's the first part. That's step one. Second part, now looking at it from a different angle. Avol, but, b'li ha-Torah, if a person doesn't have Torah, b'vadai lo yimso Hashem yisborach, they certainly will not find Hashem. Meaning, if they're seeking, but they're not seeking with the Torah, they also won't find God. Ki ha-Torah hu ha-kli shenasal lanu Hashem yisborach ba'atzmo, kedei lahagia elav yisborach. The Torah is the kli that we must have in order to reach Hashem. V'im eino lokeach ha-kli b'yado, and if you don't use the kli, af im mevakesh Hashem yisborach kol yamav, even though you're seeking God all your life, lo yimsa klum, you won't find anything. So you have to have two things. You have to have the kli, which is the Torah, and you have to be a mevakesh, a seeker of a relationship with Hashem. The Torah without seeking, we won't find Hashem really. We'll be doing mitzvos. We're not going to find Hashem in our real lives. Or seeking Hashem without the Torah, we're not going to find Him either. I'd just like to qualify that for a little bit. There are people who believe in God who don't have the Torah. And they seem to have a relationship with Him, both Jews and non-Jews. So he's talking about a different kind of relationship, because a relationship with Hashem without Torah is very limited. You can't truly serve Hashem unless you have Taryag Mitzvos. So if someone says, well, you know, I love God and God is part of my life, I believe that, it's true. But there's no Shacharis, there's no Mincha, there's no Shabbos, there's no Kashrus, there's no Taras HaMishpacha. That's a very limited relationship with Hashem. So that's different because they have Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noah. They're not expected to, you know, find Hashem through Torah and Mitzvah. And their relationship with Hashem is totally on that, that they're moral, ethical, decent people, and that's what's expected of them. Absolutely. So for a person who's truly seeking Hashem, you have to have Torah. I want to give you an example. Are you familiar with the book Tuesdays with Mori? A pretty well-known book in our society, written several years ago. A very popular book. So, of course, it's populated with Jews, you know, the book, the guy who wrote it, the professor who he gets to know. And it's about a man who gets to know a professor by interviewing him. It's a Jewish professor in a university. He's a very smart person, very insightful person. And he gets a disease and he's gradually dying. And the book describes the relationship of the person who came to interview him turning into a very deep and important friendship. And all the lessons that he learned from him, a lot of nice things. Now, the professor obviously is Jewish in the book, you can tell. And again, smart, insightful, wise person. At the end of the book, he dies, and he has himself cremated. Cremated. He's cremated. And his ashes are scattered near some tree somewhere. So I read it, I feel like, oh, chaval, you know, like, that's so sad. But that's this. You can be wise. You can be insightful. You can teach lessons. If you don't have Torah, you're going to make serious mistakes in life, like that one. He did what he thought was right. You know, he did what he thought was the best thing. And having himself cremated, contrary to the most fundamental Jewish teachings, how we handle a body that's nifter, and I was mommy sad when I read it, because it just doesn't matter how smart you are. If you don't have the Torah, you're going to end up doing something like that. So that's this. Pardon me? He was ignorant of Torah. He was ignorant of Torah. Right. He was a university professor, but ignorant of Torah. So Rabbi Trusky is saying, you have to have both. You have to be a seeker, and you have to seek through the Torah. That's what brings a person into a real relationship with God. V'hineh, Haderech el Hashem mishtaneh lefi ha'adam lefi ha'eth. The pathway to a relationship with Hashem is different according to the person. Each person has their own kesher to God. And according to the times, according to the generation that you're born into. So our grandparents' generation had their Torah relationship with God. Our parents have theirs, and we have our Torah relationship with God. It's all within the framework of Torah, but we all know each door is different. Each door finds Hashem in their own way. Valkein, therefore, im mishtamesh b'dora k'ra'ui. B'tora k'ra'ui. I'm sorry? We're about 10 lines from the end. If a person uses the Torah properly, az avodasa lo yihi yamam eshava la avodah shum adam achir, their avodas Hashem will never be the same to somebody else's, because each person has to find their own expression of Torah and mitzvot, and we can't copy somebody else. We have to become who we are. Ki harehu meyuchad lo. Because everybody has their own unique contribution to Torah and mitzvot. Each person has their own. V'harbe b'nei adam einem mishtamshim b'torah. A lot of people who are living Torah, but they're not using the Torah, ela lihiyos mahalei chachayim shalohem. It's only their lifestyle. It's a lifestyle of Torah, where you send your kids to school, where you go to shul, the things that you do. So are those things nice? Yes, absolutely. It's part of Torah. But he's saying that if it's only that, if it's just a lifestyle, then once again, ve'ena mevakshim Hashem, that's not truly seeking Hashem, ve'ena magim lo yisporach, and they're not going to reach a relationship with Hashem. We have to take those things that are part of our lifestyle and say, where do I find Hashem here? How do I build my relationship with Hashem on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, on Tuesday? How do I do that? Nimsa she'im echad hu mevakesh. If a person is truly seeking, af al pi she'shomer kol ha-Torah, even though he keeps Torah fully, tamid yihiyah b'yado sfeikos, he will always have questions. Imhu b'derech hanachon. Am I living Torah the way Hashem wants me to live it? Yeah, I'm davening, I'm keeping kosher, but am I living Torah the way Hashem wants me to? Lahagia el beis el, an expression, to reach the house of Hashem, meaning a relationship with God. V'im zu hasulam sharosho magia hashamayma, is this the ladder whose top reaches the heaven? Are we on that ladder? Are we climbing? V'alkein, therefore, afilu hatana ho eloki, even the great Tana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shebavade lohaya biyado shum aveira kal shebekal, who certainly was not doing even the smallest aveiros, because he was a tzadik gomer, v'asak ba'avodasa yisporach kol yamav, who was completely immersed in avodas Hashem for all of his days, bocha, he cried at the end of his life, d'lo yada, because he didn't know, im hishtamesh k'ra'ui b'torah, was he using it, applying the Torah properly to his life? Was he keeping it? Of course. Was he learning yomim v'layla? Yes. But was he living it according to the way Hashem wanted him to and applying it to his own personal life? L'hagia el yediyas habori sporach, to reach a intimate knowledge of God, kefi ma shehoya biyado la'asos, according to his true abilities. And therefore he cried. He doesn't know which way he's going, Gan Eden or Gehenna. So we can all look at that and say, Hashem gave us our skills, our talents, our milas, our chesronos. He gave us this beautiful life of Yiddishkeit. Now it's up to us to find Hashem within this life that we lead. And if we're not asking ourselves the question, where do I find God, then we have stopped seeking. Then we're more into a lifestyle, which we would call mechanical, rote, Torah and mitzvot, which we all slip into. But it's just important to learn a mimer like this, to wake ourselves up, to remember what we're doing and what we are living for. Okay, any questions or comments? Dori, please.
He says it's through Torah.
Mm-hmm.
So, in our generation,
that limit us, or is it, and also, you know, women aren't supposed to learn certain parts of Torah. So I'm a little...
Okay.
Yeah.
So Torah really means the whole picture of Torah. And it's not just sitting over a sefer. He means the life of Torah. A mitzvah, a midah tova, emuna, hashgacha, all that is Torah. So whatever mitzvahs women are not chayv in, that's not really, in this respect, it's not limiting, because that's not related to their own potential. If we're not chayv in something, then that's not related to my potential. But the things that we have available in our door, yes, Yiridas Hadoros, and the Torah that we have available to us, and every way that we can connect to it, that's all part of what he's talking about. Learning Torah from a sefer is one dimension of Torah. Living Torah really is what he's talking about, the life of Torah. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes, Sandy, please.
That's extremely humbling as an individual.
Yeah.
Background, so I always thank Hashem that we're here, where we are. But it's very humbling when you think about you don't know where Hashem, where your potential is according to what Hashem placed you in life.
Yes, we really don't know. And we have to have both sides. I think it's important to feel good about what we're doing and our accomplishments, to recognize our accomplishments, to feel a sense of pride in that. I think that's extremely important. And at the same time, if that's the only side of the scale for us, then we end up smug and self-righteous and all the things that are not pleasant. And we have to have both. You know, a sense of really feeling joyous to have Yiddishkeit and Torah, and a sense of, I'm not really sure what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from me, but I'm going to give it my best. We have to be humbled by a mimer like this and by our approach to Torah, or we really go off the other side of the scale and we don't grow. It's always a balance when it comes to Yiddishkeit. Yeah, please, Mir.
Isn't it what a person is thinking about? In other words, if you're saying, my intention to do this is to do a mitzvah, my intention when I'm doing this is to grow or to do something. Whereas, you can do it without the thought.
Right.
So the expression in Yiddish, which Ralph said, Avu lik der kup, like, where is your...
Where's your head?
Where's your head?
Baal Shem Tov said, what a person is where their mind is.
So that's...
That's that expression, right.
With it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of it, is making sure we're engaged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That our mind is engaged with what we're doing, so mm-hmm. we're not doing things as much as possible out of routine.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Trusky would often rail against this. He was a very fiery person. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you this. When you heard him talk like this, you were shaken up. You didn't walk away and say, wow, that was such a nice speech. It's not how you walked away from hearing him. You walked away shook up. And that's how he wanted it. He wanted people to be shaken. And he was himself like that. He was constantly reevaluating himself. It's an Adam Gadol Ma'od, and in a state of constant reevaluation. I remember once at a Shabbos table he spoke, and he said something about Shabbos, and somebody raised their hand and said, Rabbi Twersky, last week you said something different about Shabbos. He said, that was last week. So he lived by this. And you walked away feeling like, I need to look into my life a little bit. You didn't walk away feeling smug. Yeah. Who had a hand up I saw a minute ago? Sorry. Yes, please, Linda, yeah.
So, the story about the rabbi wrote that
couldn't see
the light.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
what do we learn from that?
Hashem has your back, That's amazing. He has his back. He didn't allow him to sin, even though he didn't know there was a sin there. So we have so many situations in life, or at least I can say personally, I have situations in life where I do see that Hashem has my back. And I have other stupid situations in life where I pray that it's not going to happen. I'll give you an example. I'm super careful in my own life about checking for bugs in produce. But when I ride my bicycle, no matter how hard I try, they fly
into the blood me. Flies in your mouth.
And I'm constantly stopping my ride to watch out my face. It's the most ridiculous. And I pray to Hashem all the time, please, you know I'm so careful with this mitzvah. Please, don't let me swallow a bug because I do everything I right. can, stylus, and they're still coming in. So over those type of situations, how do we get Hashem to have our back? Like, is that just a level of deserving, a level of connection? Is that like, how is he zocheh to have Hashem make sure he didn't sin?
Right.
Like, just by davening to Hashem that we'll never sin, doesn't always work.
You know, a person who has very high levels of Yirat Shamayim, you know, is great, is zocheh to a certain Shmira. Mm-hmm. So somebody like that is zocheh to a certain Shmira. We all have it, but like you said, we can tell that there are situations we'd like to have more Shmira. So David Hashem to protect you. It's just increasing. It's just increasing our avodah, increasing our Yiddishkeit. You know, like, similar to what Rabbi Twersky is saying, is constantly really trying our best to move forward. So we're zocheh to that relationship. Yeah. Did you have your hand up a minute ago?
This conversation reminded me of a guest that we used to have often on Shabbos. I used to hear her always whispering at the beginning of each course of Lord Shabbos Kodesh. Mm-hmm. I think there was a difference between like leading a Jewish lifestyle and a Jewish life. Like she incorporated everything.
She was trying, she really, did, really trying
to
make
Hashem,
it real.
You know,
yeah. Now, I want to tell you a little story, and it's not at all to take away from the beautiful story that Mr. Schumann just said, but it will give a little insight into Rabbi Twersky and also onto this demanding kind of avoda. So there was somebody at his Shabbos table who was saying before he ate on Shabbos, L'kavod Shabbos Kodesh. He was saying it a little too loud. It was more like, come take a look what I'm doing, right? So Rabbi Twersky said, I think you mean l'kavod your belly. I think you mean l'kavod your belly. Now, so this, you know, is an opportunity to bring this out, that l'kavod Shabbos Kodesh, and there is an Indian to say that before you eat food on Shabbos, to say l'kavod Shabbos Kodesh. It's brought down, it's an Indian to do that. Like this person was doing it. Like all things, if we're not careful, it will turn into something that we shouldn't be doing, into gaiva, advertising our own relationship with Hashem. So even the holy things that we do, we have to scrutinize and make sure that they're being done in a modest way. We're not attracting attention, and we're not trying to attract attention by the avoda that we do. Hatznei aleches. There's always that balance. The Sforim HaKadoshim say that in addition to doing tshuva for our averos, we have to do tshuva for our mitzvahs. Because how do we do the mitzvah? Right? We could have done it a little better. Yeah. Maybe we were trying to show people the mitzvah that I'm doing. So there's always makom to take it, b'zras Hashem, to a more pure level without beating ourselves up. That's another side of the balance, right? Some people feel whatever they do, they're not doing anything right. You talk to someone like that, I never do anything right. And you know the person, they do so many good things, but they just can't get off of that. Oh, I can't do anything right in my life. So always with that shikul of demanding further growth, but not beating oneself up, being humble and being oved, like that's our Yiddishkeit, that's our rich, multi-leveled avodas Hashem that we're striving for. Yes, yeah, Sora, please.
So I just want to give an example of that, how one sort of deals with it. You know, I find, for example, if I'm davening and I'm actually paying attention, that I sort of go, oh, great, I'm happy. Well, today I'm actually paying attention to what I'm happy. And then right away, I'm going to take away from it every time. Like, I feel like with anything, how do we sort of balance that feeling of being happy that maybe today we didn't say this, or we are paying attention to our dogging, or we are doing this with, yeah, we're not supposed to feel, I mean, we're supposed to feel like we're doing the right thing because we have to do the right thing, and not in the happiness with the humbleness.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's mama shit. So I think it's good that you say to yourself, I'm happy I'm paying attention today. But that's where it should stop. Because like the next step, you know, for all of us to be like, I paid attention today. Which is different than I'm happy I paid attention. So it's one a step or two away from being smug. You know, and that already now we're venturing off into Amida Ra. So just that awareness. And to be happy that I concentrated today, Baruch Hashem, in my davening, that's a good thing. And one area of Shmira there is always to say, thank you, Hashem, for helping me concentrate better today. Please help me concentrate next time I daven. So we're giving it over to our Kodesh Baruch Hu and not strictly taking credit on by ourselves. Have a great day, everybody. Asher Koach. Wonderful day. Have a great week. Yes. So two things. Number one, that this year was Le'ilui Nishmas Esther Bat Mazal, dedicated by Tanya Schiffman. And secondly, we will be having shiur next week on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, but I will be giving shiur. The Thursday after that, I'll be out of town. But this coming Thursday, Bezras Hashem, a week from today, yes, there will be shiur. Have a great day. I get in charge, everybody. Sol Zayin Gesund.